data report that was launched yesterday during the Ocean Day. The launch of this report comes at the time where we are about to allocate fishing rights in 9 sectors, and we are also about to allocate fishing rights to small-scale fisheries, which is part of the implementation plan of the small-scale fisheries policy. Now, the challenge when you look at the CETA report is outlining various stocks that are under pressure. Basically, what your CETA report on fisheries does is to give you a picture of where the resources stand vis-a-vis the fishing pressure that is expected on that fishing on that season. So it is evident that we quite have a huge pressure or perhaps a red flag of a number of inshore species for obvious reasons, given the way people are able to fish it, given the preciousness of these species like your lobster and your squid. So it is quite very much important that we should outline that the decline of some of the fish resources is not a unique South African issue. This is a global problem where we are seeing a decline on fish species in the ocean. However, also, I think it is important to also emphasize, Chair, that the decline of the fish species, as opposed to a very dominant narrative that calls that you cannot allow more people to grant them access because stocks are declining. I think we need to upfront correct this misperception. Of course, you have to limit the number of people that exercise fishing in any at any given point. That's a good management practice. But we know that there has been a deliberate effort to exclude the people from gaining access to the resources of South Africa. And the question here is about redistribution rather than saying we cannot allow any other people to fish. Let us keep those who are outside to enjoy the fishing and exclude those that are outside. And I think it is very critical that I make this point very clear before we proceed with this issue. I will quickly take you through the regulations, next slide. And I think the portfolio committee, honorable members, are quite aware of the extensive processes that have gone into this process of drafting the regulation, amending the Marine Living Resources Act in making sure that we do recognize the small-scale fisheries sector. And also, there have been several intensive consultation workshops that have been put together, series of them trying to come up with these draft regulations. And the draft regulations, after they have been drafted, they were sent to the Office of the State Chief Law Advisor to give input, and we received very minor inputs there that were incorporated into the final draft, which was then signed by the Minister toward the end of February of this year in preparation for the publishing for public comment. So those draft regulations were published on the 6th of March, and I think there was an extensive process that saw us through in terms of doing this public consultation. There were venues throughout the whole coast, from Port Nolos in Northern Cape until the border of Mozambique in Nunoti. We distributed various teams in various venues where the people were engaging, explaining these regulations and trying to assist the people to understand. Also, the reason why we did this was that, as you would know, honorable members, there has been a lapse of time between the time when the policy was started in 2007 and the time we are now implementing the policy. It has been a very, very long time. And of course, obviously, some some people have forgotten what the policies seek to serve, what we wanted to achieve with it. So we saw it seemed that it was good that these public consultations should be extensive as possible. I must also indicate, honorable members, that we also did agree that even though we have tried this extensive consultation, we realized that there were still some communities that perhaps we could not have reached. And it also given the time that we were giving people, that perhaps it would not be really enough time to give 30 days. And I think honorable members did raise the issue and requested the department to consider extending the period of this. So basically, these regulations, honorable members, is just an overview of what they seek to achieve or what to extend. There's about 13 of these regulations. The first regulation is just the definition of who qualifies as a small-scale fisher, a small-scale fishing community, and stuff like that. The regulation to regard is focusing on the purpose of the regulation, which also we take from why we were amending the Act in the first place, in ensuring equitable access to fish by the small-scale fishing communities, and also to recognize that we will take a multi-species approach in guiding of the rights. And I think the honorable members have also been briefed about this issue. This is basically meaning that one fishing community or cooperative is not going to fish one species if it is a lobster, but there will be various number of fish species that they will have access to. That's what the multi-species approach is talking to. And also the issue of transforming the inequalities in the past fisheries system, as I have alluded in the effect when I made the introduction, that this is about granting access to people that have been denied access deliberately by the system that seeks to exclude the people from participating into the fisheries. And also, every key of the policy is about addressing the issue of poverty. We know that a number of these fishing communities that reside within these coastal areas, in the four provinces actually, are relatively poor communities. The issue of food security, we can't emphasize much more on that issue, and given that, and I think Minister emphasized this as well yesterday when we were having the function about the nutrition that has to come with the food, and we know that a number of these fish resources have a high nutritious value. The issue of socio-economic development is just one. And I think it is important that perhaps I deliberate a little bit on this thing. The issue of cooperatives, whether cooperatives should be the way to go or not, has been deliberated, and I'm not going to go into that fact. I want to bring the honorable members to the fact that at the heart of the small-scale fisheries policy is about the people. This is about the people, making sure that people are getting a reasonable economic benefit, and whatever that they are given access to does translate to a form of economic benefit, and that is very critical, and I think we can deliberate more on that. The Regulation 3, honorable members, is talking around the issue of the identification of the fishers, the verification of the fishers, and the registration of the fishers. And needless to say here, we acknowledge the problem that the interim relief came with. Extensive problems there are linked to people who are not supposed to be benefiting in this program, but are benefiting. Some are teachers, some are counselors, some are doing all sorts of things, but they are in the list in the interim relief. We acknowledge there is no problem around that. And also there's a huge number of people who have constantly been saying, we are supposed to be in the list. I'm a bona fide fisherman. I'm supposed to be in the list. But I was cut out because the person who was doing the process either did not like me or did not like my political affiliation or did not like the way I dress or the way I talk or all sorts of kind of things. People were giving the reasons why they were excluded in the process. Now, we are saying that in the regulation tree is exactly trying to address that in making sure that the people who benefit into this program are the people who are really meant to benefit. Now, the process of identifying these people has to be detached from the department, because as you would know, the department has been accused of manipulating this, deciding who should be in and out, and all of the other accusations that have been brought. So the department sought to distance itself from the process, as we have appointed independent service providers that are going to be doing the actual process of identification. But of course, the department is going to oversee the whole process in making sure that things happen in a smooth way. Regulation 4 is with regards to the issues of cooperative and fishing rights, because the issue here is that no fishing rights are going to be issued if the bona fide fishers are not part of a cooperative. So you have to be a part of a cooperative that is going to be determined and limited and going to approve once the service provider has finished that work of the identification and forming and registering this cooperative. Then those cooperatives are going to be approved by the minister, and those allocations are going to happen in those cooperatives. Again, I need to emphasize here, nothing forbids a fisherman who feels that they do not want to be part of a fishing cooperative that is going to be granted in this process. Nothing forbids that person to have their own other cooperative and apply under the provision when we do a request for application. So what it means, honorable members, those people who do not want to be part of this process, they have an opportunity to form their whatever they call it, but they will have to apply under a competitive process. They are going to be assessed as with regards to the whole other process. Now, the regulations around this cohort also, we are saying we are looking at a maximum of 15 years where a cohort, fishing cohort, is granted a fishing right. But this does not mean from the onset we are all going to declare this as 15-year right already. Because remember, honorable members, we have not allocated fishing rights to cooperatives before in South Africa. This is something we are going to be doing for the first time. Although it has been successful in other countries, but we know South Africa has a specific context in each and everything that we are doing. So we are saying, as the rollout plan is set to take a process of about 3 years, we want to look and explore within the 3 years what would be the maximum best time we have to allocate these fishing rights on, because we don't want to lock ourselves on 15 years immediately. Then we experience some troubles, because the fact of the matter is that once this is in practice, there are other things that are going to emanate as kind of challenges that we would not have even preempted before we do the actual implementation. So we are saying we want to give a lead time where we can say that if it does not work in this way, in this cooperative, we can have some room to maneuver so that we can do that, so that we don't lock ourselves within that 15 years. But ideally, we are saying this fishing rights and co-ops should be set to a maximum of 15 years. So should in the first year we find that all is good, all is going well, then we will be able to confirm those cooperatives within a period of 15 years. The small scale fishing rights cannot be transferred. We have in the Marine Living Resources Act Section 21 that allows for a transfer of fishing rights. This is not going to be allowed in this. There is various reasons that are obvious why we should not allow for the transfer of fishing rights. The approval of the cooperative constitution and the management plan are also taken care in that regulation 4, and it's making provisions on the access on the facet of species, which is the smart species I have talked to. Regulation 5, honorable members, deals basically with the members of the cooperative, when you add members, you can only add members after 3 years. Again, these are the draft regulations. There has been concerns from the communities around these 3 years, saying, why do you want to wait for 3 years to make an additional to the members of the cooperative? So this was the draft one. We will see what comes out of all inputs that we have had to really try and consolidate and find a most agreeable term of when a new member can be added. But also it's with regards to the replacement of members. Some members may die, some members may want to resign. So this regulation deals with those processes. That in an event somebody dies, in an event somebody exits the cooperative, what happens? And also with regard to a process of replacing the members, maybe where we are saying it should be a member of a family or somebody from a deceased relative or child of that person, so that they can become members of the cooperative as well. Now, Minister, as I have said, is required to approve the amendments to the cooperative membership. Whenever it happens, people have to apply through the department to alert the department of any of those changes, as it is happening with regard to any other changes that happen through the Section 21 that I have indicated. Then that goes to the Minister to approve. Regulation 6 basically looks at the issue of the fish establishing rights and the issue of the secondary cohort. Now, only secondary cooperatives comprising of two or more primary small-scale fisheries cooperatives are eligible to apply for a fish processing right. Fish processing right is basically where you do the processing of the fish, value add maybe, and whatever other things that you can do. So you need to be, it needs to be 100% ownership. That's secondary co-op. Now, the reason why we are flagging this issue, honorable members, is to try and ensure the maximum benefit for the community. Again, we have learned a lesson on the interim relief. There is something that is really going on that is problematic. Some it is caused by the market health, some it is caused by various people who want to cause various conflicts among communities for various reasons that they have, like they want to do these things. But there is an issue whereby a lobster is bought for 10 rand per kilogram from a small fisherman, and this lobster is sold for about 170 rand per kilogram, or even 200 rand at some point. Now, this is the same fish, and I think if honorable members would remember, if you do dine at the Cape Town Fish Market, just look at the value of a lobster per kilogram, whether it you go to Ocean Basket or in any other shop. Just have an interest, take a look at the menu. If you go to any shop that sells fish, look at the price per kilogram of the lobster. Now, it's very important that we need to ensure maximum benefit that goes to these communities, because they will not be profitable. We are not going to deal with this issue of poverty. We are not going to deal with this issue of economic development if their lobster is going to be taken for 10 rand per kilogram and somebody sells it for 170 per kilogram or even 200 grams per kilogram. Now, primary cooperatives will be allowed to store the fish. However, this is an issue that we still deliberating, that we're raising, that we need to ensure that there are facilities that are provided so that these things can be able to be done. Otherwise, you give this access to these small fishing cooperatives, you don't give them access to the proper infrastructure, we might as well be really working against the intentions of this policy. Regulation 7 is looking at the constitution and the management plans of the cooperative. Regulation 8 is talking to certain powers and duties of the cooperative. But there is an issue here, again, that by the second season, a primary co-op that serves fish must be a member of at least one secondary cooperative. Taking in mind that we are saying the ownership of a secondary cooperative must be 100% owned by the members of the primary cooperative. And after a second season, a primary cooperative shall only sell fish to a secondary cooperative. There's a various input that we have received again here in comments that we have received from various communities with regards to this thing. And as I say, this was just a recommendation on the draft resolution. We will see where we end up with this issue, but a lot of people are arguing that we need to relook at this issue. Now, Minister may exempt a primary cooperative to sell to other entities for a specified period of time, should there be a valid reason to do so. And this is linked to the issue that I'm saying, that for instance, other entities could be other people who are not within the path of the secondary co-op or the primary cooperative. It could be that there are direct markets that could be organized for the small cooperative, and those direct markets would form these other entities that they would be selling to. But the issue again here is to ensure that there is maximum benefit, economic benefit to the people that this policy is intended for. Cooperatives may be the recipient of a transfer to commercial fishing rights. This again has received a number of comments, because here we are saying it could be that somebody who is already there having a fishing right but wants to exercise their commercial fishing rights within a cooperative, they could be able to say within that cooperative they get a transferred commercial fishing right. And this can only employ the services of any person if members of the cooperatives do not have the necessary skills. Again, this is trying to consolidate and concentrate the job opportunities within a co-op to say whatever that you need to do as a co-op, find people within the community that can do that. Only in cases that you cannot find those people within your community, then you can be able to find those that are. And this is not usually the case. My experience working in fisheries and working with fishing communities, you would find that there's various skills that you would find within a fishing community. And I don't really foresee a case where people really have to sort out some kind of work that needs to be done. One other remember, quickly, Regulation 9 deals with the issue of the multi-species approach. I'm not going to deal much on this issue. But just to emphasize with you, the issue about the total allowable catch and the total applied effort. Effort is simply saying you look at the number of people participating as opposed to a total allowable catch, which looks at the catch limits of what is sustainable, of what you can catch. It would look maybe at the number of people who can participate, or sometimes the number of boats that can participate in a particular fishery. Because a certain size of a boat spending certain time at sea can tell you how much those people relatively will be catching. And so this issue is just looking at this issue. The Regulation 10 is with regards to the small scale fishing area. And I think this is one of the very key things that really needs attention and focus. Fishing areas will be established based on the type of species requested. Not only requested, but also the availability. And I think honorable members, remember the map that we had presented to the honorable members that was showing a number of fishing communities throughout the whole coast and various kinds of fish species that are available. So this is not only going to be about people requesting a passport. It doesn't help for a community that is in Northern Cape to request for a fish that occurs in KZN, for instance. So the issue here is also going to be guided by what is available within that place. But the issue, again, is with regards to the demarcation of fishing areas. There is an argument that we could use the already municipal demarcations to do that, but the issue is that fish don't necessarily know boundaries. So you would find, for instance, between Port Edward and Bizana, you would find that there's a municipal demarcation there because they are so close to each other. The Mtavuna, I think there's that river that separates Port Edward from Bizana. But you would find that there's some fish that goes within all that area. So it doesn't help for you to do a demarcation there, a border line, because it's a municipal demarcation, whereas maybe most of the fish is on the other side and these people are simply walking through the same. So the issue of the demarcation of these fishing areas is something that we as the department are taking in so that we can really look into it. The issue again on the regulation 11 about the co-management structure of these cooperatives. I think the issue here, Honorable Lemus, I must bring this issue. It is very critical that we should build confidence. Confidence building among these fishing communities is going to be very key. I know there has already been issues around people may not want to work together, they may not really be in terms with each other. Yes, there are some problems regarding that, but I think if we do confidence building in a proper way, communities will want to work with each other. But what becomes very much important is that the members within these communities themselves take full ownership of the management of these cooperatives, including full ownership of the resources themselves. Because when people appreciate that this resource belongs to us, then they will be able to take care of what belongs to them, because they also know that it is about the sustainability of this resource, so that we can have it for the future as well. And we think this can also assist with the issue of poaching, which is very, very, very embedded within some fishing communities. And often what we hear is that people say, we don't even have access to this resource. There are people who come from other parts and come fish here, so why should we not poach and go into the water and get this? But when communities know that this is a demarcated area of fish that belongs to this community, then communities will be able to say, we are going to take responsibility of this area in making sure that nobody, even among the communities themselves, no members are going to be black sheep and try and do poaching and damage the resource and do issues like that. So that issue looks in issues like the co-management structures and how the committees that are going to do that are going to be. But what we are really trying to encourage here is that the communities should take full ownership of this process. Regulation 12 deals with issues of conflict resolution mechanisms, as I've indicated, that we have potential conflicts that can arise, and I think we can deal with those. I won't deliver as much more. And regulation 13 deals with issues of compliance, as I've also alluded in the issue of trying to guard against poaching, but also we are going to institute Section 28 on issues of non-compliance. Section 28 is a section in the Marine Living Resources Act that says that should somebody not adhere to the conditions, maybe you contravene the act, minister has got the right to either revoke your rights or alter your rights. Altering your rights, it could be that minister decides that he gives you less access than you had originally made. But in serious cases, judged from case to case, we do revoke the rights of people who contravene the act. So we are saying if communities know that if they continue perpetually contravening the rules, then they are facing a danger where the minister can revoke the rights and take it away from them. Regulation 14, honorable members, is just dealing with issues of titles, the constitution, explaining what that it is, explains what members can do and can't do within an entity, and this process also of this constitution. We have done it together with the DTI. So DTI was very much fully on board, and the Department of Small Business as well. We did this together with them. And we can go in number 14, yes. And now this deals with the process of finalizing the regulation. As I've indicated, we have had an extension of 30 days to give for people to further give comments, because the portfolio committee members requested that it was too short to give the 30 days that we had initially given. So we had until the 28th of April to do and receive comments, so we had to open it further. Now all the comments have been received. It closed last week Friday, the time for the comments. We are now consolidating all the comments, and as I was continuously saying on the presentation, there are certain clauses on these regulations where people were really voicing out much more issues on, to say, let's reconsider this. So we are in the process now of consolidating all of those comments. And then those comments will be incorporated in the final regulations. And Minister will be required to approve the final regulations. We envisage that by the 31 of July, we would have had the Amendment Act and the final regulations promulgated. I thank you very much, Honourable Member.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Okay, under, I think it is page 4, we see that several workshops were held in 2013 to develop a draft regulation. I would like to know what evidence exists to prove that those who participated in the workshop fully understood its content and could now base their decisions on such content. In other words, that they can comment on the entire process from a position of being fully informed. I heard the acting DG say that they are in the process of coordinating all the comments they received. I would like to know who handles the comments and what assurances are there that these were or will all be considered. Under Regulation 2, talks about ensuring equitable access to fish by small-scale fishing communities. I've been told that equitable access can only be achieved if the rights and quotas held by large companies, when that is put up for included in this whole project. I've got another comment somewhere else about this thing. In other words, what I'm saying is that there is not, I've been told that there's not enough fish in the sea to ensure that the aim of the small-scale fisheries plan to empower coastal communities to achieve that, unless you also turn to the rights held by big fishing companies. Mm-hmm. I would like to know whether that has been considered. I've been in this committee a couple of months, and I am of the opinion, and I think that has been admitted by that itself, that there is a lack of capacity within the department, and I think it's compounded by issues. Mr. Mania of the DDG deciding to go back to Pretoria and leaving the, not that I'm casting aspersions on Sipokaja, I think she's doing a good job. But are you able to deliver on your core mandate in the light of this apparent or lack of capacity. And that is the sustainable management of our fisheries resources. As far as Regulation 3 is concerned, I'm of the view that at community level, the expression of interest has not been properly expressed to fishers. I've been told that even the appointed community representatives, those people appointed by DAF, do not completely understand the concept and couldn't explain it properly to community. Regulation 4. Sorry. I'm not done with it. I would like to know how you're going about identifying and verifying the bona fide fishers and fishing communities. Because if you look at the big problems there were with the interim relief processes, there seems to be, or in that process, there's a lot of illegal and corrupt activities. We still see the fallout today. So I would like to know, how do you verify and how do you make sure that only the real fishermen are included on this list of 30,000 fishers to be empowered? Okay.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair, and thanks to Captain DDG, Ms. Ndika. DG, Captain DG, Mr. Mani. I want to raise this so that again and again it's taken up. I think the fisheries sector in the department is a very complex sector or branch. And I think the department will have to really up the work of the people who are in that section. And the only way to do it maybe is to inform at some stage this committee on what skills we have in that area. Because if we are not as the committee very sure of the skills there, we'll keep and weep for shooting at the dark. So at some stage we'll have to get that. Because this thing of people who are sent to school and all that kind of thing, and we're not sure who are those people and what are they doing. Well, I think if these people are still there, they will boost our work in terms of that. I think that's not anything to do with the regulations, but what is that? I didn't hear anything about the role of traditional leaders. Yes, you talk of communities, and in our view, communities, particularly in the area, are key as the traditional leaders in this area. Before my chief raised that, and I raised it myself as a substitute. So I think they will play a very important role when you deal with communities in those areas. Something must be said about those people. The round that we have taken in terms of consulting or informing people, I'm not sure how effective it was and how it may be effective. It's a very important work. Because if that is not done properly or effective, you will leave the people knowing little about what they must do. At the time when we are opening the doors for them to fish. So I think you have to give us your view in terms of effectiveness, of course with facts, and maybe the plan as to how we'll further educate them as a department in terms of what they must do, because I think there is a question there for them. Explain to me what maybe this one is in regulation for. Explain to me, there is this 15-year duration of the rights, may not have the 15 years, but also talk of 3 years. I guess this is the first time you do this, maybe the 3 years will be pilots in the effectiveness of this as we proceed to 15 years. How are you going to do it? I mean, it's 15 years, but after that in 3 years. I won't take much because I'll have to come back if there is another opportunity. I'm happy that in the sign of apologies in Regulation 5, Minister is required to approve the amendment to cooperatives. Because I think all this must also have the hand of the Minister to say, because it's about transformation in our society, and then giving the chance to these people. Secondary and primary cause. That's my last point for now. There is secondary, and then there are, I think there are about three. So this is the last one. No, it's just to, you when you go to those people, even in ordinary co-ops, whether it's vegetable cooperation, cooperatives and all of that, it's secondary and primary. It's always confusing. And then, because I think you are now beginning to simplify things in terms of fisheries. To us. Simplify that as well, so that as we talk to the people, we are very clear on that one. I see what the intention is, and how many primary or secondary, that kind of thing. So please explain that to us, so that we speak as the purpose of that.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you also for the presentation, which is quite giving one to the life of what the voice has been about the family. So, very simple. Chair, others would be inputs, but I think presenters will also be input the chefs in the input. Now, my first one is due to what member Ron Bruto was saying on consultation, and then because you have noted that it was not sufficient enough. Maybe if you could actually try to unpack what forms were there, the workshops, were the public meetings, were the seminars, were what kind of
platform of consultation are taking, because we're looking from the point of a very grassroots level. So you see, grassroots level, we are trying to get them into the mainstream of the economy and so on. So there are issues of culture, there are issues of traditions and so on. So you will not apply one way of communicating with those people. Maybe you can actually address that one on the platform actually. If you take the other one, it's on the internet. Because you have noticed that the department will be conducted on the internet and so on. But now to the service provider that is there, what are the powers? What are the limitations? What way can they take a decision to an extent that the department may come in, because that is something we have got to do better. Because we would not want to get into a situation where you have engaged a service provider, but the department is again back to do their job, because you know people will do their job, but they will always refer to say, if this is not happening, we will call it, but ultimately it will be useless that we have that middleman at the end, because we will not move. Now, for us to move, we want decision makers. We want people who will just take decisions and so on, and so on, so that it's not the department, just the department is actually trying to exonerate itself from being implicated. So we will want to know the powers of that service provider also. The other one is just on the cooperative registration. I think here we will also want to get more deep understanding of that, because of course for now you have got already existing small businesses and so on and so on and so on, but because this is now in the government plans, there will be financial dedicated finances there, there automatically is going to be other masculine they are going to come and formal and very good plans and everything, because from time to time there will be attempts like bigger ones to come and want to check, because it's going to, they are going to want to have this what you call the window dressing. You know what is happening now in the parliament and so on. So that thing will always want to come, and what are the measures put in place deal with that kind of thing, because we should not wait for it to happen. It must be in the place to say we avoid it. You know the notion that things but it's a lot of traffic allow them to go to it. And you know what, that is better than cure, you know, but prevention is better than cure. So in the plan we need to stay forward every to say, for this not to happen, this is how we are going to deal with it from the beginning. This is the hard part of it now, that's why. Now, the other one I don't understand is, maybe I need more knowledge on this one to say. Members of corps will be prohibited from becoming owners of commercial rights. I don't understand that. I was going to get this guarantee. Regulation agents, use of service providers. Now, you have said that it's not actually intended, but there will be a situation. I've seen where constructions and projects are being produced. There are clauses that say there should be a transfer of skills to the people that are given the job. How are you going to feature in that one? Because there must be time limits. If such a thing happens, it should be based on time limits so that people are capacitated and are able to deal with those things alone. Now, the key to me is the monitoring and evaluation. We have gone there, we have seen very loose things happening and so on and so on. And I have always emphasized in my concern that monitoring and evaluation are aspects on their own. They are a very key aspect
of cabinets when you cover. When you start in the evaluation, that's what. Yeah. So I would like to talk to Dr. Professor and what is the plan? A very plan of monitoring and evaluation. How do you intend to do it in the future? Not come up with a result from time to time. Thank you. I welcome you to the Sanaba. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. Jay, I will go through the background slide 4, just on the ELRA Amendment Act. Why must it be amended again? What is the section 19 that you're talking about, and what is the reason for that? And then maybe to the acting DG, was I think the acting DG also at the time when we promulgated or we worked through the act. What if we not pick up? And the reason why I'm also asking this, Chair, is we're dealing with the Act now, and I remember we were just sitting here about words like must and may and all kinds of things. And when we are dealing with Acts, we don't always see these things. I'm just saying for the purpose of this committee. The previous committee only passed 2 pieces of legislation in the 5 years, and both of them are coming back, or both of them are having problems. So, you know, I'm concerned about that. We can't pass legislation and then take us a year or 2 years to see something that while we were busy with it, we didn't see. So just also maybe for the department, I know it's not the one that we're dealing with, but it's problematic. I was answered on the, I wanted to ask how far is the process and when it will start, but it was mentioned. I think Honourable Young has asked this question also, who is dealing with that and will it be in place? Because it's November now, if you're saying it's going to start, you know, or to finalise at the end of July, I remember. And then linked to that question, are we not going to go wait for the passing of the NLRA again? That's my question on the NLRA, because we must first pass the regulations so that we can fix the NLRA, but are we not going to wait for the NLRA then again? And then it's not going to happen at the end of July. So I'm looking at time frame. On the cooperative, the regulation of cooperatives, is there something either in the regulations or in the cooperatives or wherever, how big is this cooperative? Can it be between 300 and 500 people, or what is the size that we're talking about? And I think you explained that people can decide themselves who's going to be in the cooperative. I think my stance on cooperatives is well known. I don't think it's fair for people to be forced to be in a cooperative. That's a fight that I already had. Then, the cooperatives again, the training of this cooperative. I know now we are dealing with cooperatives and Honourable Madonna is sitting on the land portfolio now. There is massive challenges because there is no training. People are being put in cooperatives and they are being helped to register, and that's the end of the story. On the registration itself, who is going to deal with that? Is there cost involved? What is the cost involved? Does the communities know this? Was it part of this regulation, or are they just being told that you're going through the regulations now? The regulations say you must be forming a cooperative, and they're all very happy. And then when the cooperative actually needs to start, someone is going to tell them, it's going to cost you 5,000 rand or whatever. I don't know what it costs. So this is the while you were doing the fishing. For self-fishing policies, did you also tell them about the cooperatives and what is involved if they are part of the cooperatives? Because people, I know in my community, people know as the cooperative. It's almost like an informal, lot of people coming together and you're working, but you don't know all these, that there are actually going to be legal implications on you, and that's when the problem starts. If there's a fighting, it's always around that legal, the legal issues. Then I'm on the CAC, that will allow for catch and central applied, if that is
And seeing here the first year of allocation of cooperatives are given first choice to agree on appointment of this and between the cooperatives in the same region, if no agreement reached, then the minister would be required to consider the appointment. I'm seeing a fight coming. Do we have, at the moment, a CAC or CAE for areas already in place? And is it out there? Does the community know about it? Even before we start going into training for officers and the fight starts, we have to know people are going to get upset about. So is it there? Is it already? Does communities know what are we talking about or not? And if they don't, when is that going to be in place? The other questions that I wanted to find out is, who is going to decide? Who is
what?
But I have two chips. Oh, I have one. Who's going to decide? This is now the fisherman. Who is going to be that person? Are we going to do a painful test or how is it going to work? Because, you know, I'm serious. Especially if people are fighting already maybe in communities because people are fighting for serious resources. So who is going to be that person that's going to say, you are part of this fishing community and you can be part of the cooperative?
Thank you, Jack. May I thank the department for their presentation. It leaves me with many questions, which hopefully have been covered. My colleagues, but I'm really struggling with the question just recently posed by Comrade Stane, I mean Honorable Stane, and she is sharing the same sentiment. Who monitors the application? Who is going to certify that this is the right applicant? And I'm forced to pose this question, Chairperson, because this weekend I took a drive down the Wild Coast from Coffee Bay to Holding the Wall and through the Haven. And on my journey along the coast, I came across a young man with a paper bag. And he sees me and says, here's some food. And I look into the paper bag. He's got almost 2 dozen of rock lobster, not rock lobster, rock oysters. And you would be shocked how much I paid just for about 12 of them. He was satisfied with 200 rand. And at the waterfront, if I had to pay, I would have probably been paying for two of those at 200. And I'm interested as to who is then empowering these young people in the class. The communication mechanism about these applications, you know, how are we going to be certain that someone sitting at Holding the Wall doing their own means to try and be getting some form of an income per day is going to be aware about what is being discussed in these walls and is going to be legislated through this parliament. And I think we're taking for granted that we speak weekly and things are discussed, but we are not really questioning if it's getting to the right person on the grassroots level. Is that youngster aware to the applications that he could be able to make, that he could then be able to sit with a 15-year application for him to be able to be empowered and get some kind of access into real fishing? So this is what I really worried about. I wanted to see if the department is really going to strain in ensuring that it reaches the people at grassroots level. You know, we make it here and we are seated with these
conferences and big business, but it's not really getting down to the people at the grassroots level. So I'd like to be assured and taken into confidence that this is indeed benefiting the true beneficiaries.
If not, when do we get a report?
aspect of the society. I know that at some point it will represent your readiness in terms of implementation of the policy. But there's been a question on the support package and how do you bring other partners, those that can play an important role. You talk about the small scale, the small department. What are their roles? What commitment has already made to that project? The last thing is this. You forgot to mention the Northern Cape province. I was convinced that the other day don't have it. So I just want to confirm that why they're not here. This one, the last thing, only during the implementation of public participation process,
terminate, we must find a mechanism
to employ those people who lead the service on the one side, but also it cannot be seen that when government is emphasizing employment creation and government without due consideration will terminate services, we needed to find a place to resolve that, and that was the primary purpose of the meeting, and those engagements are going on. Yes, we did visit the Coast Bay area. We met the traditional leader. At the same time, we visited that area because at that stage, it was during this process of consultations and presentation of the regulation. Now, I have made it clear to all the colleagues in all the provinces that the appearance of either the DDG or the chief director must not change the mode and the processes that we would have given them and their responsibility. And the reason we did visit, we observed, of course we discussed with the leader, and we indicated we will return to have consultations, but we did not want to address the people who were giving the presentation because we wanted to retain the consistency in terms of the instructions we have given. I'm not sure if I didn't miss you. The Northern Cape also has some portion of the ocean, and they are being considered as one of the coastal provinces, and they are included. But if we did make that omission, Chair, we would expect that. But I would agree with you that they are supposed to be included. There have been, and I probably will go back to some of the questions, because one has me to deal with the issue of the capacity of the branch to carry out its mandate. One of the things when you make treasury, they start by saying they give you money, and then they want to understand why are you here. We are clearly limited at the moment in terms of the capacity we have, and we are making the most of the resources whilst we are looking at the reconfiguration, number one, two. Secondly, as we are presenting our case to National Treasury to find more or reasonable resources to enable us to carry out our mandate. But we will provide, as the committee requests, the skills base that we are operating from as fisheries and what gaps we have at the moment. We will provide that. But we are doing the best, and in our areas, and that's why we also using the partnerships that we have to augment on the resources and the capacities that we have. On the issue, Honourable Stein, on the issue of the legislation, indeed the NLRA has been amended. But the finalization in terms of the formalization awaits the regulation. We have to go with the regulation. So the sooner we complete the regulation, the act will be then formalized.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Let me deal first with the question around the issue that Honorable Young asked in regard to having not been enough fish in the ocean. Honourable Member, let me indicate to you that currently, the branch fisheries management branch administers and oversees 22 commercial fisheries sectors in South Africa. So in this 3,000-kilometer coastline, we have declared 22 commercial fisheries. Now, of these 22 commercial fisheries, about three, or maybe let me say four, realistically, would be of interest to the small-scale fishers. They are near shore. They can use relatively smaller boats to access them because it is costly to go further away from the shore to do fishing. It's expensive, the diesel, the crew having to be at sea those number of days. It needs relatively people with deeper pockets, which the small scale fishers will not have. Now, realistically, I think the question we should be asking ourselves, Honorable Chair, is that if of the 22 small scale fishers are interested in four, so you have about 18 commercial sectors that commercial fishers or companies are not going to have any competition on from the small scale fishers. So, I mean, really, can you really exclude people from participating in four sectors while there is available 18 sectors that these small scale fishers cannot participate on? This is a question I'm not going to answer, but I am just posing this to the honorable members to really consider. The issue of sustainable management of the resources. Again, I want to flag this issue. I'm not flagging it because I want to defend anything. I'm flagging this because I am trained in fisheries management and I'm a marine scientist, so I know what I'm talking about. Sustainable fisheries management is not a challenge for South Africa alone. It is a global problem. Fishing is done for various reasons at various times. Deep sea fishing is done by people who want first and foremost to make profits. There's no person who fishes in the deep sea that is doing it for food security. Hello? No, that is not true. It is about making profit. Period. However, even if people are fishing deep sea, wants to make profit, it is in the interest of their businesses that those businesses should continue for a longer time. So it becomes their secondary interest in making sure that they fish in a sustainable way so that there is fish for tomorrow. IMJ does not want to close in 2 years' time because there is no hake in the sea. They have an interest that they are an owned company, they should continue fishing. So it is in their interest to make sure that there is sustainability in fishing. For managers, it is our interest to make sure that there is sustainability in fishing because we do not want to have our resources wiped off and leave nothing to fish for future generations. Sometimes finding a balance between these two issues, driven by profit, protecting and ensuring and protecting the environment and sustainability, it is not easy to find the balance. It's not a problem of South Africa. Go anywhere else in the world. Everybody currently they are talking about the global reports on the World Economic Forum. They are talking the issues of sustainability of natural resources, not just in the ocean, natural resources, be it in mining, the air, the water, and everything. There is a huge debate about maintaining economic viability of today while you are ensuring future generations enjoy as much as we enjoy out of this. It's not easy to find the balance. That is why a dialogue of fisheries management is necessary to continue having these discussions while we try to find that balance. Now, the issue that is raised again around the issue of the consultation, honorable members, I will be very brutally honest with you. We have a challenge as civil servants of staying in air-conditioned offices and chairs that are swinging to the right and to the left. And we sometimes have no clue what it is that people need. Because we don't get out of the offices and get to understand what these things we write continually on paper really mean for the people. And I think I really want to appreciate the work that the Portfolio Committee is doing, and I would like that you really become a hot air on our toes or on our heads, because it is very critical. The issue around the consultation was not done to the maximum way that it should have been done. First, the planning of it was not optimal. Secondly, the consultations themselves led a number of components. Honorable Makhegwana, I fully agree with you. The consultation with traditional leaders, which is very clear and critical, we did not do that. We did not do that. It is very critical. We understand it is its importance. It is very critical. We did not do that. When we did the consultation, I think also I must explain this issue. It will address the issue that Honorable Makhegwana raised, Honorable Mandela raised, and Honorable Stain raised. When the department started this work in 2007, remember everybody saw that the department was going cooperative. Now, you had self-appointed people who have been running around up and down in communities, setting up cooperatives, which are not the cooperatives we are talking about today. So you have an example of what you're talking about, of people who say it costs us, we don't know how to do that, we don't know, because those people are not appointed by the department. They are self-appointed. They took an opportunity because they saw that the department was dragging feet in implementing this policy. From 2007, nothing was happening in 2008, nothing in 2009, nothing in 2010. So people were like, we already see it's going cooperative, so let's start doing our own. So that by the time the department allocates, we tell them that we are already a cooperative, just give up efficient rights. Which is the reason why we have employed service providers that are going to do the process for the department. They are doing it together with DTI. That's the role DTI is playing in terms of explaining the cooperatives. The issue here, as the presentation is showing, we are using the Cooperatives Act of 2005 developed by the DTI. And if you read that act, it says minimum in the cooperative is going to be 5 people, and there is no limit as to the number, but minimum is 5. So we are setting that standard, and we are using that standard from the Cooperatives Act of 2005. But what the process is going to entail, the people are going to have an opportunity of submitting them. Because once these bona fide fishers are identified, there is going to be a list that is going to be published. And in that list, when it gets published, everybody is going to see the list. And those who have feel that they are left out of the process, they should have been part of the list, they will approach their department and the service provider to say, my name is not there. How are we going to know, Honorable Youngblood, who is the bona fide fisher, who is not? The answer is very simple. The community knows who is the real fisher and who is not the real fisher. Truth be told. Even to the fifth generation of fishing, the community knows who was married to who, who took a daughter of who became the grandchild and the granddaughter of who. Those things are known in the community. Go to my community, they will tell you everything about my family, even the things that my grandfather did not manage to tell me. The communities know these things. So the service providers are going to be working with the communities, not the community's representatives. But the representatives you are talking about, there are representatives that were just allocated by the department just to deal with the interim system, which I have said to all you honorable members, we recognize was very problematic. So the service provider is going to be working with the community, not a community representative. So there's not going to be an individual sitting in some statue who should be a bona fide fisherman in the district at the same time. So we will monitor the process and we have to make sure in terms of the quality of that work. Honorable Ramukwasi, you mentioned something very critical in terms of the type of consultation that we have done. So far, the consultations that we have done were only in the form of in-bizo. So we had these venues throughout the whole coast from Northern Cape to KZN. So we had venues, so people were making presentations, then we had people who were literally talking to and to what we did. We deplore people who speak that particular language. We can provide the comments for the honorable members from this engagement. We have comments from Port St. John's, where people from Port St. John's present people who spoke in their language, who were explaining things in their own languages. And they felt that the engagement was very fruitful. They were able to understand. However, I agree that that form of consultation alone may not be enough, which is why if we consider partnering with the traditional leaders, they will also add value in assisting us in terms of what are other means that we can use in a particular community that is going to be most effective. Yes, I agree. The one we have done may not be optimally effective, and we are considering doing follow-ups. We have various communities where we have already received a request for people to come and explain over and over again, because the truth of the matter is that this process can never be a hit and run, more especially when since 2007, this year has really forgotten how these things should happen. So we kind of need a constant step-by-step going with them and taking them through so that they fully understand Honorable Mandela in terms of the value of what those oysters in that basket or in that bucket that they are having is really worth and how it could be utilized for a maximum gain. Indeed, Honorable Mashekwane, the 3-year period, 15-year period, the 3-year is the implementation plan that we are saying we want to pilot how it is going to happen, because we are saying we may experience problems that we could not have anticipated. So we're saying, let's look within this period of 3 years. It could be 1 year that we say, okay, all fine, things are going well, let's just confirm with cooperatives to be 15 years. One of the things that I need to mention is that the issues about fighting in communities, honorable members, I need to be very clear, is not really caused by personal differences. The truth of the matter, once there is money thrown into communities, there is problem. This is the truth of the matter. Now, some of these monies get thrown by the marketers. We have a challenge of scrupulous marketers who get into communities to specifically cause chaos, cause fighting. What marketers do sometimes, they get to a community that is having an interim relief permit of an oyster or let's say of an lobster. They look at the tonnage that they are going to get. The marketers quickly translate how much this should be, honorable what. Then they say, we are going to give you an advance. They give our people an advance of 300,000. Now problems begin. Once that 300,000, or sometimes that 300,000 lands in the hands of Mr. Maya and myself know about this 300,000, and the rest of the 7 other people do not know about this money. And then other marketers, while already they have signed an agreement now to say that they are going to take this lobster from us. Now the 2-3 others who were not part of this deal that was done by me and Mr. Mani also do another deal with a different marketer for the same fish. So you find that they become in a community 2 or 3 marketers now coming to the department, applying for one export permit, but this export permit is coming from a fish that one permit, then it becomes a profit. So the truth of the matter here is that communities love each other. Communities do find amicable ways of settling out their differences. Like in families, you find ways immediately to try to resolve your problem. But once there is an external factor, then things really become ugly. So I think this is very key to really note that some of these problems are really caused by the market for the interest and the reasons that they are having. In terms of monitoring and evaluation, I cannot agree more with you, Honorable, that we absolutely need a better tool of monitoring and evaluation. Do we have a plan for now? My answer is simply no. We don't have a plan as yet how we are going to do this. We are in the process of discussing how that plan should come about. We are having DTI partnering with us in terms of ensuring that monitoring and evaluation does happen. However, monitoring and evaluation on this small scale fisheries rollout is not only about the progress we are making or the lack thereof, but it is also monitoring the catches. One key factor for effective fisheries management, you need to know how much people are catching, because if you don't accurately have catches, then you do not know the fishery and you cannot even anticipate how long that fishery can continue. So one of the biggest challenges with this coastline and the small-scale fisheries that needs monitoring and evaluation on a level more is the issue of monitoring catches. Now, we have developed, and we're in a process of finalizing this. It is a young man in the department. He works in the small-scale fisheries sector, Mr. Abongi Lemongo. He did a master's thesis and was funded by Vodacom. They saw the concept that he had, and they liked it very much. He is a very brilliant young guy. He has developed a software tool application that is going to use a simple phone, and it only needs 1 cent as credit in your phone for it to operate. Now, what that tool is going to do is going to assist us in doing the accurate monitoring of catches throughout this coastline. So the cooperatives themselves will have a catch data monitor. That monitor is simply monitoring the catches that are being done by a cooperative. So that tool even tells you where the person is that is capturing that. It is a good GPS coordinate. You are having apparatus to take a photo, what type of species that is. It can show you various number of things. And I think it will be useful at some other point, Honorable Chair, that we could share this with the Honorable Members so that we just take them through on this system that we are going to be utilizing. That is also going to be very critical in assisting us on the monitoring and evaluation. But the comprehensive plan for now, no, we do not have what we will do. The issue of PAC, Honorable Stain and PAC, I need to emphasize this issue. I fully agree with you. I cannot disagree with you. If we can leave it to the communities to decide how much allocation they should get, we can never see the day of light in implementing this policy. The Act currently gives the powers to the minister. It is minister who is designated authority to determine TAE and TAC. So that exercise, we are just saying we could ask the community to indicate, because the issue here is also about that economic viability. Because question is, if one cooperative is going to have 20 fishermen and you give them 5 fish as their TAC, is that profitable? And the answer is no. So you kind of have to have a formula that will ensure that this number of people in that particular cooperative will really gain the maximum benefit out of it. But definitely, the final decision is not. I think the way we have put it is a little bit misleading. Thank you for pointing that out. We will correct that. How we have put it in the presentation is a little bit misleading. It will not happen in that way. The training, Honorable Chair, of the cooperatives is very critical. Some people don't even know bookkeeping. For this cooperative, the truth of the matter is the consciousness we're trying to bring to our people that they need to function like a business. They must see it as a business. So that although it's a community cooperative, it's not like something that is really like any other thing, but it should be seen as a business. So they need the skills in bookkeeping, in managing their money, and doing all of that. DTI and the Department of Small Business have indicated what they are doing is exactly that, in training them. They have not yet committed funding the Department of Small Businesses, but they have already fully committed the capacity. We have the people participating. They are intending to find some kind of money, because we have set aside as the department 10 million for this process. So when they saw the money that we are putting, they have promised that they can as well bring something to the table. So is DTI is definitely also considering putting some funding to complement the funding that we are doing. But absolutely we recognize that there needs to be real training that is going to happen. I think that Honorable Young would ask about the evidence that people have understood and they are able to comment on this consultation. The evidence Honorable Young will provide to the portfolio committee. As I'm saying, when we're doing this consultation, we ask people to give feedback that they understood the issues. Do they still need much more explained to them and stuff? We will provide that. However, I agree. It was not in all of the places we went to where people agreed they have understood. Hence, we are planning follow-up meetings that are going to have fewer people but concentrated people addressing exactly those things that people felt that they did not understand. Who will handle the comments that have to be consolidated? We are not obviously going to take every comment that has been taken place. The department officials are consolidating the comments, and the comments will be presented, and we will present the summary of the recommendations as well to the portfolio committee, and there will be a management meeting that is going to be called, that is going to consider which comments we can take into consideration and which comments we cannot. It's going to be a transparent process, and we will avail the information in order. I think to avoid window dressing, steps that we need to take. One of the reasons that we are having these regulations in the way that they are in ensuring that people who are involved in the primary cooperatives, the primary cooperative will be this cooperative that is composed of fishermen going out to sea to catch that snook. Let's make an example of a snook. They bring the snook among all the other things that they do. So their function, the primary, is to catch, bring the swan. The secondary cooperative will be that cooperative that does the processing of that snook, whereby maybe they would even cut it to smoke, to dry it, smoke it, market it, and whatever. So, but the issue is that since we are saying to address this issue of window dressing, I think this issue is a very, very, very a big issue in the fisheries industry. Honorable members, window dressing is very huge in the fisheries industry, and one of the reasons why it is becoming huge, the department often than not does nothing about it. And I think perhaps it's going to be very important that we make a classical pure forensic investigation
so that we really have the time to be able to have, so that people can really see and learn that it is not constitutional. But I think people are eventually continuing to do this thing because they know that the department is not going to do anything about it. But the issue, Honorable Member, is that, Honorable Matriwan, the primary cooperative to address the issue of people getting cheated in this middle precinct is going to be comprising of these registered fishermen. The secondary cooperative is also going to employ the fishermen who do the catching. Fishing is seasonal, so you can do the catching. After catching, what do? You don't sit and bask in the sun and do whatever. So you actually go and do the processing itself to ensure, again, that the maximum participation is of those people who really own that cooperative. So the primary cooperative fishermen will be 100% owners of the secondary cooperative. But as I said, we yet still to see this in practice, how it is going to fold out, and we yet to learn what it is that we need to do and how we need to do it. We have seen that acts don't necessarily prevent people to do branding. We had the BEE charters, we got the triple BEEs. People always find ways to go around the act and do those things that they are not supposed to do, which is why I'm saying, although we can have it vote in that way and in that setup, we still yet to see in practice how it is going to fold out. But the issue, I think, is that we need to be vigilant in taking up these issues. I thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the policy. You know, I was asking myself whether you have a good charter. Thank you very much for the engagement, and can I then allow there to follow up question?
Thank you. I would like to know if the department knows how the basket of species for which we call selfishers, how that looks, and can the committee be provided with a list of the species to be exploited by small-scale fisheries? Then, just a follow-up question and a matter of clarity. I hear the acting DDG say that this whole business of co-ops will be introduced for the first time now, and that the existing co-ops, or the co-ops that are now in communities at the moment, that is people who decided by themselves that they were going to form themselves into co-ops. Now, I've got a problem with that, because the department only deals with the leadership of the co-ops and not with the fishermen who had the interim relief right. I'm trying to understand what is happening there, and maybe the acting DDG can tell us what is happening there. Then just one last one. The acting DDG has admitted that the consultation process didn't go as well as can be expected because of certain certain shortcomings in the process. But there's going to be another round of consultation with the communities with regards to who's on the list of fishermen, who's the genuine fishermen. And I would then like to know, what are you doing or what have you done to make sure that the same kind of problems that you've experienced in the consultation process is not repeated in the second round of consultation. Thanks.
you, Jefferson, and thank you for the explanation. I'm learning more because you are really taking time to explain it very carefully. For the purpose of the portfolio, now that Mr. Kwadi has so nicely said that we must monitor the new world, but what would be your objectives and how do we monitor it? In your yearly annual reports, when you come to the portfolio, how are we going to be able to see what is the objectives and how will we be able to see if the objectives of this small-scale fishing policy is going to be? So do you have something in mind to come and report how the reporting will happen so that we can see the effectiveness of the programs are being looked at? No, I want to see if they have a plan so that we can...
You must tell them.
My answer is if we have less hungry people in South Africa, we know that the object of the department is followed. I know that fishing is not for food, but also that they must be able to sell and eat something. I hope that would be the objective, that the small-scale fishing people won't just have one fish everyone to take home to eat, but they will have enough to sell. So we need to be able to manage that. Then, Chairperson, I can't leave this thing without asking again about the threat 13, because I'm sure that must be sorted out before you can allocate. So how far are we in that process? And I'm still not happy, but it's a fight for the minister that we must take on, that there was in the report there were allegations against certain officials in the department that they are still there and still involved. And I'm not sure that has been dealt with, Chair. So I'm concerned about that. Mm-hmm. And I don't think maybe the fishermen will always be. That's why we ask questions about who's dealing with this and who's going to look at who's going to make the who's going to be fishermen. But people are concerned that certain officials within the department, I think, I would almost say found guilty in their report, and they are still there dealing with the same issue. Okay,
thank you. Thank you, Chair. The first one is around, I request a clarification on the prohibition of co-op members from becoming owners of the commercial. I don't understand what it is. The second one is, what happens to the small scale farmers from commercial? Authority that holds can extend now to become potential big fish house now, because if it goes well, we are building a big nation of the fish house and computer that will go in front of the world. Now, what happens? I don't know what is that new fish house.
Okay, so for me. Nearly, on the complementary to what about Ramaphosa was saying, 22 commercial fish health, 22 fish health. They say that it's untouchable. That is clear. And what is then being the radical transformation agenda of this government, and where does it lead to? And at the workshop, I remember one of our doctors there saying one of the confusion that they had is that there is no future cut from the data arrangement I got very worried that, as you respond to the question of Honorable Ramaphosa, probably I'll get to sense that the two cities are less than half. So we are giving the snack to the small selfish.
percentage of 10 million budget is it for training or is the implementation of the world program of small scale. And this is used for the implementation of the entire plan. I don't care if you really want to say that. But if there are other responsibilities for the
thank you, Honorable Chair. Let me start with the last question that you are posing. Yes, the 10 million is for the implementation of the plan for 1 year. So the 10 million is only for this financial year. So for next financial year, we will have another money to continue because the rollout plan, which is this pilot period, we have set it for 3 years. So we have got the 10 million for one financial year. However, the DTI and small business, they are also still expected to top up to that 10 million. Honorable, the issue of FRED 2015, we have to deal with this matter. We have to close on FRED 2015. Closing on it is talking to the appeals, including the Lionfish Association issue. Now, although the sectors that were allocated for FRED 2015, it was 8 sectors, are different from the sectors we are allocating this year. But administratively so, and for good governance and it is very important that we close the chapter on the previous before we start engaging. But of course, because we have been overtaken by the events in terms of the timing, and also the extension is until February. So we had to kind of run these processes parallel. We have started already as a department dealing with the appeals. We're going through the documentation, correcting what needs to be corrected, and the two reports, the Harris report, and remember there was a Mami Masadi report subsequent to that. So we are following the corrective measures because, and as you would remember, that both reports were saying although FRED 2015 was badly handled, it still could be redeemed, if I were to put that word. So we are following those steps in terms of redeeming that. The month of May and this month of June is even intensifying to get us close to do the first communication. And in the month of June, I can assure you that we will be starting communicating with the appellants in terms of what it is going to entail and how we take the process forward. With regard to the allegation of certain officials in the department, I can assure you that the allegations that came about certain individuals, those individuals are not involved in the new rights allocation process. They are also not involved in the corrective measures of FRED 2015. However, because these are still allegations which need to be tested, any action can be taken once they are tested to be correct. Then I think the processes of the department will then kick in. But we have taken a precautionary measure. They are removed. None of them is involved in all of the processes. With regards to the issue in terms of the small scale fishers becoming big, in essence, honorable members, let me say that realistically in fishing, there is nothing like a small scale fisher and a commercial fisher. I think these terminologies that were developed, I mean, all fishing is commercial. That's the truth of the matter. Even the guy who can fish for recreational purposes, if that guy decides to sell that fish at some time, of course, on those days, the policy for these recreational fishers to do the sale of their catches. But if that guy extends on a road and sells that fish for $10, that is business. That is connected to business transaction. So, in a sense, fishing is commercial. But of course, because of the scale of it, because then you classify it as small, medium, and big. And yes, Honorable Ramukwa, the desired output of the government is that the small-scale fishermen should graduate from being small so that they don't remain small forever, like the thing that some companies do. They have an empowerment partner, and that partner is empowerment for life. You continue to be empowered. You must reach a stage where you become big. That is a desired thing. But however, as I was saying, because of the constraints on natural resources, it may be that even though any small fisher cooperative becomes big, because remember, the Act allows us to allocate fishing rights. This is another issue that I think we must also emphasize. Fishing quota is not an entitlement. Fishing quota, fish in the ocean of South Africa belongs to all the South Africans. But the challenge is that not every South African can be allowed to go fish, otherwise it will be chaos. So government grants a particular individual or a company temporary access to exercise the right to fish. That is a privilege. When that right expires, it reverts back to the state, to the people. So it should not be that if people are having fishing quota, think they have an entitlement that when they expire, government is forced to reissue them. That it is a privilege. It is granted for a particular time. Now, the issue is that it could be desirable that small-scale fishing co-op graduates to become bigger. But you would find it becomes bigger within the time we can allocate fishing rights. So the issue is that, according to the Act, we allocate the fishing rights maybe for 8 years, for 10 years, and maximum is 15 years. So wherever you become mature, but if it is not time to allocate fishing rights, you cannot be allocated the fishing rights unless in a situation whereby of section 28 I was talking about, where we revoke a right. That maybe if we revoke a right from the past, then we can reallocate that right to somebody who has graduated to be commercial in that sense. So of course, there are these trades I'm talking about, giving and taking, this thin balance that we need to always find. That it may be that you graduate, but there is not enough to allocate, or it is not time to allocate, but it is desirable that people must graduate and become bigger. Because as Honorable Chair was saying, in those bigger commercial sectors that are offshore, you don't find a targeted groups for transformation operating there. Because the truth of the matter, Honorable Members, it is expensive to keep a vessel in the ocean fishing. It is very costly. It needs somebody with very big pockets. The issue of the packet of pieces, or maybe the issue of maybe the honorable chair that you have talked on the 22 commercial fisheries. Also, let me explain that what I was saying was that of these 22 commercial fishing sectors, about 4 of them are accessible to the small operators because of their nature, that they are closer to the shore. So they can easily participate on that. But to participate on the ones that are further offshore, they kind of need those economic means to be able to get there. Yes, indeed. There is no transformation charter for fisheries because DTI told us that they are doing away with transformation charters. There is various reasons that they were raising. So we cannot have a transformation charter because DTI tells us to put a hold on that. However, sector-specific policies, which is your fishing sector for each city of the 22 fishing sector, when we allocate fishing rights, each sector has a revised sector-specific policy. So government has an opportunity within a sector-specific policy to advance targets for transformation. It has to be done, it needs to be done, and it is going to be done. So we are in the process now of the 9 sectors that we are going to be allocating. We have already developed the policies, and we are going to be beginning public participation on those policies, but as well, just like the regulations we have done with them, we have to request public comments and participation on those. Honorable Young Blood, we have what the basket is going to look like. As I was saying, the basket is not only guided by what is asked, it is also guided mainly by what is available in that particular area. Our coastline, if you look at those 4 provinces, some are on the Atlantic side, some are on the southern part, the Agala side, some are more on the Indian Ocean side now. Because of the diversity and the differences of our ocean, because of these forces and the currents that act in our coastline, you get different kinds of fishes throughout the coastline. For instance, you are not going to find a lot of snook or a snook in Cape Town. It's happening on the Atlantic side. So the issue is that we have the list and we will provide the honorable members with the list. Yes, we have an idea what the basket, but mainly the basket is going to be guided by what is available within. As well as I was saying, there's no point of giving snow to somebody who doesn't have snow. The existing cooperatives, about them, the issue is that, as I said, people went ahead of the process because the department was taking too much long time. They established cooperatives. We are not saying those cooperatives are completely going to be null and void. It could be that those cooperatives, how they are formed, fit in the criteria that we have for these fishing cooperatives. So it will be simply just modifying them to fit in into the criteria. But definitely, if they don't fit in within that criteria, unfortunately, they'll have to disband them and create those that will fit the criteria. How do we make sure that we don't repeat the shortcomings that we have had? When we returned from these consultations, as I said, we requested the people right at the centers to give us live feedback, and there were people who were writing the live feedback. Those who could read and write, they wrote to us to give us the feedback. Ourselves as a department, when we returned, we did a process whereby we as well were identifying the loopholes. So we have incorporated all of that. So what we have done on our review group is to say, lessons learned, what are they? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. How do we make sure that we don't repeat them? Then we put ways of addressing those issues. But how we have dealt with this issue. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Captain DG and Captain DG. We are now going to listen. Thank you very much for the information. I'm still follow up on issues that were raised in the implementation plan.
reflection of the backward Akapa Act, so that our amendments can then be responding to the objective properly. So, I'm going to allow the federal government to then to be involved. You have the quote to start.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, members. The report, the committee report is as follows. Interim report of the Portfolio Committee on Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries on the Performing Animal Protection Amendment Day, Bill number 999 of 2015, dated 9 June 2015. The Portfolio Committee on Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, having considered the subject matter of the Performing Animal Protection Amendment Bill, Bill number 9 of 2015, National Assembly Section 75, referred to be reported by John Taking the Council, that Section 79 Bill reports as follows. The bill was referred to the Portfolio Committee on the 3rd of March 2015, 2018. The bill was referred to the committee on the 3rd of May, sorry, remember, of May, 3 May 2015. The bill seeks to amend the provision of the Performing Animal Protection Act, Act number 35 of number 24 of 1935, the principal act. The committee is currently deliberating on the bill and intends to finalize its report in compliance with the NBA Rule 25. One, whilst inquiring into the subject of the bill and conducting the public hearing and committee deliberation, the committee realized that it may be necessary to amend other provisions of the principal act which were not included in the bill. The committee was pushed to amend certain other provisions of the principal act and request the permission of the NA in order to report on further amendments to the principal act other than those presented in the bill. National Assembly Rule 2493B stipulates that if the committee is dealing with the bill amended provisions of the legislation, the committee may seek the permission of the nation of the assembly to inquire into amending other provisions of that bill. The committee recommendation, in terms of the NA Rule 2493B, the committee recommends that the National Assembly grant permission to inquire into and amend additional provisions to the principal text, report to be considered. Thank you.
As a report, any input or correction to the petition? Maybe for me the question would be whether are we not supposed to confine ourselves to those sections that we said we are going to touch. But you are looking at the issue that if you are asking the question, are we not creating a problem that you are going to require? Because the person didn't go to the school. They had a half-finished job here. So if we now
are going to stipulate which ones we are going to look into. We might find one, or we're doing close by close, that we didn't pick up. And then we're going to have to go back, and then Parliament's going to think we don't know what we're doing here. In the meantime, it's important that we have a half finished job here.
Okay,
no, what they are what they are saying, because there's no budget in the APAC for any of that. So I think we need to at one stage get some presentation from the department, what is the agreement, because if the poultry industry says that it is going to lose jobs through this agreement, we need to see if we're going to grow jobs somewhere else for the agricultural sector.
Okay, I think what we might do simply to get the people on their goal, what are their agreements, what, and so, but in our agenda we have that last presentation in terms of the funding model of the paper as an action plan. So if you remember this year, some of us that will come back and present the funding model for that action plan. So those are the issues. I think we know this and then we'll keep that for the department to come and pick up on some of our work. I think what we're talking about is just a debate probably is not sort of conclusive. If you have listened to once the president had an issue explaining about the argument that they had with the American, and the Minister of Trade and Industry did that during the budget speech. But the issues of losing of job, whether it's caused by a war or not, is something else. And we have delegated Honorable Ramaphosa and Honorable Yomji to go to the SAPA conference. So they'll bring back the report which will guide us. What are the stakeholders saying about this war thing? Because the perspective of government for now, okay? I think we are done, member. Thank you very much.
The meeting with the Maldives is tomorrow. What are we going to do? I see. But what are we expected to do for the country? So it's for the nation, the legitimate question.